Avant de commencer l'épisode, je vais faire juste un petit avertissement sur celui-ci. En considérant que j'ai sorti de ma zone de confort en faisant une entrevue en anglais, ça se peut que sur toute la partie où je pose des questions, j'ai essentiellement, je m'enfarge beaucoup dans mes mots puis je ne suis pas très habile. Si cette situation ne vous plaît pas, vous pouvez sauter l'épisode immédiatement. Sinon, ben, vous pouvez minimalement trouver très drôle mon incapacité à parler un anglais qui a du sens, puis au moins que Dimitri a réussi à démêler ce que je dis et de faire une entrevue qui est par ailleurs très intéressante en termes de contenu du point de vue de ce que Dimitri a partagé. Merci.
Bienvenue au Polysécur, épisode spécial Sécur. Je suis avec Dimitri de Splunk, qui a fait une présentation en anglais. Donc, on va switcher les éléments de l'anglais, puis on va le laisser se présenter et ensuite poser des questions sur sa présentation. Hi, Dimitri. Could you introduce yourself briefly?
Of course. My name is Dimitri McKay. I'm a principal security strategist and CISO advisor at Splunk.
Cool. So you present to pull up your socks as Splunk primer on building or rebuilding your security operation. So could you just briefly explain what is it, and we go for question after that.
Of course. So my talk was based on years of doing security assessments, and as a global resource at Splunk, I see a lot of security programs, and it gives me a unique perspective on what a successful security program looks like and what doesn't look successful.
Yeah, and you start by telling us what it's very hard to achieve a well-balanced SOC, and what for you it's a well-balanced SOC.
So we often see security operations programs that are heavily weighted towards either technology or people or process. And a well-balanced SOC is a happy combination of the three. There's the right technologies and a diverse group of people with ranging skill sets enough process where the people can move through cases, do investigations without hindrance. So it's just the three legs of the security stool.
Yeah, and what is the main errors that SOCs do about tools, for example, or software?
You know, my biggest frustration in security has been that in security, the majority of lower maturity programs are trying to build their own tools. And they spend a ton of resources building and maintaining tools, not reducing risk. That's literally the job that we're in, is reducing risk. So I often ask the question, what business do you want to be in? Development or operations, or do you want to be in security? And that to me is the biggest mistake, is wasting a lot of time and energy on tools.
Yeah, and you talk about it in your presentations, that the knowing how to to use to script or those stuff are a big showstopper for some hiring process, and you destroy that the need to know how to script or to develop software more extensively. So could you go further with that?
Of course. So not everyone has to have the same skill set in a security operations center, especially if it's built correctly, if it's a hierarchical formation where you have specialists in specific areas, where you have your tier ones, tier twos, tier threes, and they're good at what they do. This comes back to economies of scale. Scripting is great, but it shouldn't be contingent upon every member having that skill set. The reality is, I'd rather have people who are curious. I'd rather have people who are excited and who communicate well. We can teach scripting, we can teach regex, we can teach SPL, but you can't force curiosity. You either have it or you don't.
Yeah, and we move to the people side of a SOC, and you put about four or five major roles that is very key to a successful SOC.
It's okay. No, I still think you need the hierarchy. You need people who follow the same sort of help desk model, that military model of more folks at tier one than you have at tier three. I think tier one, tier two, three are important, but specialization is something that is becoming much more common, and that's a good thing. So if we look at either the MITRE phases or the kill chain, the reality is we have a lot more cases that need to be managed that are focused on the early stages, on recon, on first making, breaking the beach of getting onto the into the network. And so having specialists who focus on intrusion, on malware, on phishing, that's powerful, because you're basically cutting off a lot of the chances that these folks have to get in. But you don't need to heavily focus on exfiltration, because if you've staffed right, exfiltration is a very slim chance. The first time I saw this model was actually from Jeremiah Grossman of White Hat Security. He did something interesting where he was focusing his people on malware, on the intrusion aspect, and all of his people that came in, that's what they focused on. And when they got really good at that, they could move on to sort of the center of the phases. So what sort of phase were those? Those were lateral movement. What does one have to know to track lateral movement? And then if you got really good at that, you could move on to exfiltration. But that kept his security program front heavy, as it should be. And I thought it was brilliant. And I've seen it more and more over the last few years.
Yeah, and you made a point about trainees, because most companies don't want to hire trainees. They want smart and knowledgeable people from day one. That's you think, and I think is a big mistake, because we cut off from good people that can help and just pull up the socks. Yeah. And you, we switched process, because the third tool is the process. Could you go further with how the process should be, and what's the main mistakes are be done?
Well, as far as process go, the most successful security programs use automation in every phase of their case management investigation process. Every single one. The reality is this: as a former pen tester, I would be in and out of a network in hours, long before anyone detected that I was even there. And even if they detected that I was there via some series of alerts, by the time they got to them, it was too late. Half the time, cases weren't viewed of my activity or correlated for 24 plus hours later, at minimum. So process-wise, I'd say that the things that we need to keep in mind are that we can speed up the process with which we do case management investigation using automation. And here's what I mean. There are three phases of automation. First phase that people adopt is the reduced noise phase. And usually that's just getting rid of known false positives. And that's great. That certainly lightens the load. Second phase is add context. So that's when an analyst needs to go in and do an investigation. The reality is every single investigation we do, the first 30 minutes are about the same. It's go get the data, go get the data, go get the data. And then once you have the data, it's understanding context of the data. So for example, if I have an artifact, let's say it's a URL. If I can already look up before I even get there, if I can automate the process of looking up whether or not that URL is malicious ahead of time, where I can just get into the case and it's already there. I don't have to go looking. I don't have to spend time doing it, because it's a lot of repetition. It's waste of time. And then either phase three, give the analyst the ability to either take an action in a semi-automated fashion. So with that IP address, click a button and block it. Powerful. Or what I would prefer in the future is most analysts are looking at a report at the end of the day that shows all of the processes that have taken place, all the blocks, all the modifications. And look at that. That to me would be a much better situation. Unfortunately, people get bogged down in these very focused set of alerts, and they say, oh, we don't have time to do automation. And that to me is backwards. If you have to do it three times or more, automate it.
It must take time to have time. So if you don't, you will never will. So that's the circle of pain.
Yes.
It's no way out. So yeah, you talk about partners in the business. That is very useful and somewhat crucial to some incident response. Could you go further with those?
Sure. Well, this speaks to the process. The reality is simply this: I've seen too many breaches where a breach was identified and then things just went crazy. And it's because they didn't have process. They didn't have process lined up to say, okay, if there's a breach, these are the things we do. We call HR, we call legal, we call, we're going to call Mandiant. We're going to call like a series of processes that just define what the steps are to be taken once something like that is identified, once data is stolen, once credentials have been verified that they're compromised. And it's funny because I see it more often than I should. Partners are very much important, and not just from an investigation perspective, but also just getting data. The biggest challenge that I see with security teams with trying to do their job is bureaucracy. It's having to battle with IT or development to get the data sets that they need to do proper detection and response. And that I can't fix, but I see it all the time. The best programs have regular cadence with IT and help desk. They have regular cadence with legal and the application owners for the most important applications in the business. The reality is we can't sit in a cave anymore in security and pretend that we're really important and not talk to anyone. That's not how business works. We have to communicate with everyone.
Yeah, we are there to reduce the risk for the business and not be the Ministry of No. It's not the goal of a SOC or a security team at all. To complete to the process, could you talk more about the playbook? How those are very central to some roles, some automation for SOC.
Of course, yeah. So playbooks do a few things. If they're done right, they can serve to fix a problem that we have in security, which is speed versus validity. And here's what I mean. We use a help desk model for analysts, and we measure them based on how fast they close a case. It's not a strong move there. I would rather people do the case, do the investigation the right way instead of quickly. So with playbooks, we can define these are the processes that you have to take for this particular type of case. And we know that every time that type of case comes in, these are the things that need to happen. And automation helps a ton here. But with that, we're doing a couple things. We're doing it right, but also it's a phenomenal teaching tool. So when you're bringing in new employees, you can teach them the right way to do an investigation the first time, every time. And of course, those are living processes. They have to change over time because the tool sets change and people change and process will change. But the reason I love playbooks is because it's not just a one-off. And it requires documentation. And that's one of the big frustrations in security also, is we often find we've got this one, two people that know everything and write nothing down. And for some reason we accept that as okay, and it just doesn't scale.
Not scalable at all. It's a pain to deal with those people, and why do we accept those people to act that way? That's not acceptable to help the company or the business. It's not good. And I will ask a last question about understanding our environment. You try to showcase that it's very hard, and very small number of companies able to do that. Do you have some tips to help to move on and to help to have some kind of CMDB or something like that?
Yeah. So the reality is this. We're seeing a move from IT-focused risk to business risk. And the perception of business risk, the perception of risk as it pertains to the business is different. IT risk is what is important to the IT group: firewalls, routers, switches. But that's not a good way to build a program. So the question I often ask a CISO is, I give them a scenario. I say, okay, so let's pretend that an asteroid hits your primary office. And that's where all your data centers are. There's no cloud. Asteroid hits. Business is stopped. What are the first three things you stand up to get the business moving again? Now, if the response is firewalls, routers, servers, no, that's a fail. No. The first thing you stand up is email. That's the medium of communication you have with everyone, whether it be customers, whether it be media, whether it be employees. That's one. Two, stand up the applications that make money. It's a business. You have to drive revenue. So you get the most important applications stood up because that's what drives revenue. And the third thing is you have to take care of both your people and your customers, right? So you have to make sure that people are getting paid, that all their data, about their accounts, et cetera, is important. Now, why do I go through this? Because those are the first three things you should be securing. Right, email can be thoroughly embarrassing if it gets out in the wild, right? But if you have weird email servers on your network, you should know about it and probably disable it. Second one I push, and this is simple because no one has a CMDB. You're right, no one has a really good CMDB. It's 2-3 companies I've ever seen, tops two. The thing I tell people is I would do a vulnerability scan for email servers. Do a vulnerability scan and look for any database servers, right? Because now no one stands up an Oracle database for no reason. If it's attached to something, it's for a reason because they're very expensive. And look for any file stores, right? Anywhere data would be stored, like flat files, and those could be offer letters, that could be whatever. Look for those three things. Start there and work backward. Once you secure those three things, those are generally going to be the crown jewels. That's your P1s. And everything else, you'll get to it.
Okay, great. Thank you very much. It's very appreciated. Thank you for your time and to came to Quebec City to give your presentation. I find it pretty funny because you tackle some uncomfortable stuff that people don't want to talk about. That's great. I hope that people just see that humor as something to move forward. Thank you very much.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.